The following program is produced and paid for by Temple Emmanuel.
Sooner or later, you can bet your life that every Jew in this building is going to say the same thing. He's a little too Jewish for my taste.
Shalom, and welcome to Too Jewish with Rabbi Sam Kohan and Friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Israeli newscaster and activist Shai Ben Tekoa, a self-proclaimed settler living in the West Bank. We'll also visit with our maven on Israel, Danny Bobman, and with Tom Price on the international Jewish world. Please contact us with comments at our email address, TooJewishRadio@yahoo.com. Too Jewish is sponsored this morning by Temple Emmanuel, a Reformed Jewish community for all of Tucson. Call 327-4501 for information on Southern Arizona's fastest-growing synagogue, the only full-service Reformed congregation in Southern Arizona. We're sponsored as well by Jill Rich of Realty Executives, by Environmental Strategies, and by Better Bodies. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. It's a beautiful fall season now, at least here in the Southwest, and we're finally enjoying the weather we're famous for among discriminating vacationers from wetter, colder climates. In this Hebrew calendar month of Cheshvan, we begin to settle into the rhythms and patterns of a normal Jewish year, and especially to enjoy the weekly festival of Shabbat, the day of rest, joy, and peace that we all need regularly. 6 days of work followed by a day off of pleasant and enjoyable rest, something we all use. And frankly, for Jews, a spiritual inheritance we ought to reclaim. After all, we Jews invented the Sabbath. In the ancient world, most non-aristocrats worked every day and took no full days off. So it's worth recalling that Shabbat, a Sabbath once a week, is a rare and special blessing. A chance to recharge our batteries, to restore our sense of well-being, recover a feeling of rest and relaxation in our lives. Music is a wonderful gateway into the Sabbath, and we only play the best Jewish music here on Too Jewish. Here's a favorite Shabbat melody from Avanim, our house rock band and the featured group of Temple Emmanuel. It's a song of welcome to the Sabbath bride, Lecha Dodi, written in the 16th century by the mystical poet Shlomo Halevi Alkabetz. Come, my beloved, to welcome the Sabbath bride, Lecha Dodi.
Lecha Dodi, Likrat Kala, Bnei Shabbat, Mekabela. Lecha Dodi, Likrat Kala, Bnei Shabbat, Mekabela. Lecha Dodi, Lecha Dodi, Likrat Kala, Bnei Shabbat, Mekabela. Lecha Dodi, Likrat Kala, Bnei Shabbat, Mekabela. Shamor v'zachor v'dibur echad, ish miyad u'el ha'myuchar, arokai echad u'shimo echad, v'shem u'letiber netila. Lecha Dodi, lecha Dodi likrat kala, b'nei Shabbat mekabela. Lecha Dodi likrat kala, b'nei Shabbat mekabela. Likrat Shabbat lechu v'nelcha, ki mekor habracha, mehirosh mikedem nesucha, sofa se b'machshava tchila. Lecha Dodi, lecha Dodi likrat kala, b'nei Shabbat mekabela. Lecha Dodi likrat kala, b'nei Shabbat mekabela. Dorari, dorari, kiva ore umiori, uri uri shirda beri, kevoda naya lahayekiva. Lecha Dodi, lecha Dodi likrat kala, b'nei Shabbat mekabela. Lecha Dodi likrat kala, b'nei Shabbat mekabela. Oy ve shalom ateret bala gam besimcha u vetzola. baboi chala. Becha dodi, becha dodi likat chala. Ne shabat mekavela, becha dodi likat chala. Ne shabat mekavela, becha dodi.
The Avanim rock band of Temple Emmanuel playing and singing Lecha Dodi for the Sabbath. Our Shabbat Rocks service is coming up Friday night, November 13th at 7:30 p.m. And everyone's welcome. For a copy of our CD or information about the service, call 327-4501. This is the time of year when our Torah readings seem almost to leap from the scroll with drama, power, and excitement. Last week, in keeping with our Torah portion of Noah, we played some comedy clips on the subject from Bill Cosby. This week, before we move on to Abraham and this week's Seder of Lech Lecha, we decided to look briefly backward at yesterday's Parsha and play a bit of David Steinberg's exploration of the character of Noah.
Noah had three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, all three of whom had an IQ totaling 70. The Bible states explicitly that Noah was a righteous man in his generation. The Bible does not add words. Why do they say in his generation? Because we find out later on in Genesis that Noah liked to drink. He was in fact a drunk. The Bible states it clearly. Later on, Clifford Odets backs it up. My contention is this. If you had to live on a boat with 10,000 mating hippopotami, and those three sons for conversation, you too would be righteous only in your generation.
Noah, a righteous man in his generation. But Abraham, the subject of this week's Torah portion, is by Jewish tradition a righteous man in every generation. When we come back, we'll meet our guest this morning, Shai Ben-Tekoa, an Israeli newscaster, historian, philosopher, and self-proclaimed settler in the West Bank.
Environmental Strategies Incorporated was established in Arizona almost 15 years ago. They're a corporation that's very unique and has distinguished itself as one of the foremost environmental remediation companies in Arizona. Environmental Strategies, Inc. is also a full-service general contractor. The fact that they have two divisions affords their clients the opportunity to work with one contractor to deal with environmental problems as well as their building and remodeling needs. Environmental Strategies clientele range from single-family homeowners to multi-million-dollar Fortune 500 companies. So, if you're in need of asbestos abatement, mold remediation, or general contracting services, call Environmental Strategies at 884-1114. And, if you wish, ask for Ken Goodman, the president. He'd be more than happy to talk with you about your project. That's Environmental Strategies, 884-1114. Have you ever wanted to know more about Judaism but were afraid to ask or just didn't know the best place to start? Temple Emmanuel's Adult Education Academy, the largest and most complete adult Jewish education in Arizona, is taking registration now for its outstanding fall classes beginning the week of October 20th. Classes range from introductory courses like Taste of Judaism and Practical Judaism to Basic Judaism and Intermediate Judaism, and they include Kabbalah, Three Levels of Hebrew, courses in the forbidden love poetry of the Song of Songs, the Book of Kings, the Prayers of the Heart, adult bar and bat mitzvah, adult confirmation, and Jewish book and movie groups. Call 327-4501 for a brochure and more information. Our instructors include Rabbi Samuel M. Kohan, Rabbi David Freeland, and Rabbi Richard Safran. They're all outstanding and entertaining teachers. Classes meet in central Tucson and in the Northwest. Do the Jewish thing. Learn. Call 327-4501 to find out more.
We're pleased to welcome to Two Jewish this morning Shai Ben-Tekoa, an Israeli writer and commentator. He's formerly the lead commentator for Israel's national news on Arut Sheva. He's speaking this Sunday night on A View from the Settlements, a real live, quote, obstacle to peace settler speaks. Shai's articles, essays, and book reviews on the Arab-Israeli conflict, terrorism, and Islamic fundamentalism have appeared in the Wall Street Journal, National Review, Midstream, Congress Monthly, and other publications. He's been on PBS's The NewsHour with Jim Lehrer. We're delighted to welcome to Two Jewish Shai Ben-Tekoa. Good morning, Shai.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Tell me what your Deprogram Program website is all about.
It's very simple. It's a daily broadcast, five times a week, Sundays through Thursdays, which is put up at around 10 o'clock Israel time. It's 40 to 50 minutes of commentary on the events in Israel, interspersed with best of modern Israeli religious music, which is a melange of contemporary music known in the West with what we might say holy words, psalms put to rock and roll, if you like, and my commentary about today's events with a lot of history thrown in.
Why do you personally choose to live in, as you call it, Judea and Samaria?
Years ago, I came to the conclusion that Israel simply could not surrender Judea and Samaria and the Golan Heights and the Gaza Strip without endangering Tel Aviv and Netanya and Haifa, all of the coastal communities. The bulk of the population lives in a strip of land about 10 miles wide. Most people don't understand that from Tel Aviv's beach to the Jordan River is a whopping 50 miles. It's a country that's 50 miles wide. And the international discussion says that we're greedy and we shouldn't be 50 miles wide. That's much too much for us. We should be 10 miles, 15 miles wide. Also, these areas, Judea and Samaria, are highlands. And while they, from seen from the west, rise up about 2,000 feet, which are small mountains, from the other side, they look over the Jordan Rift Valley, which is the deepest spot on the face of the earth, outside of what's in the water. This is a geological freak. God knew what he was doing when he built the Holy Land. And this provides probably the greatest tank trap in the world, which makes for easy defense and cheap defense. And if we surrender these hilltops, which also contain radar installations, we're blind to attack from the east. So from a geostrategic military point of view alone, Israel cannot give up these hills. And by the way, everybody knows that at some level of awareness, which is why they've never been given up and why every Israeli government, regardless of its political coloration, has never given up these hills.
Shai, we will talk much more extensively with you a little later here on Two Jewish This Morning.
My name's Jean. I was so out of shape, I couldn't even get up on my horse.
Jean, a 50-plus Tucsonan, talks about why she went to personal trainer Jeremy Price of Better Bodies.
I knew it was going to be hard work, but after I'd been seeing him for only a week, I felt better about myself.
In their new private facility, Better Bodies makes it easy to lose your body fat fast.
I've lost 35 pounds. I'm wearing clothes I haven't worn for 25 or 30 years. Everything looks better.
After just 6 weeks, Better Bodies promises you a better body, and individual programs start at only $39.99 a month.
By the way, I can not only get on my horse, but I can post in that saddle for hours and hours.
For a free personal evaluation, call Better Bodies at 975-7074.
And I owe it all to Jeremy.
That's 975-7074, or on the web at BetterBodiesTucson.com.
Hi, I'm Rabbi Sam Kohan of Temple Emmanuel. There's a great story about a guy whose mother gives him two ties for his birthday, a red one and a blue one. He doesn't much like either one, but to please her, as he dresses for dinner, he puts on the red tie and comes downstairs. His mother takes one look at him and says, "So, what's the matter? You don't like the blue one?" So many times in life, we're not satisfied. We're just not getting what we want. Judaism helps teach us how we can find what we need in the world from our God and from those we love. Come to Temple Emmanuel. We'll help. Call 325-4888. Temple Emmanuel, a Reform Jewish community for all of Tucson, preschool, religious school, adult education academy. Call 325-4888. We are now getting into the best material in the book of Genesis, and I promise it's great stuff. In this week's Torah portion, Abraham, then simply known as Avram, Abraham is called by God. Lech lecha, go, leave your land and your people and your home and journey to a land that I will show you, the land that becomes Israel. Abraham unflinchingly does just that, taking his wife Sarah and his household and setting off into the great unknown. It's a powerful example of blind faith in action. God says go, and Abraham goes. In fact, it may be the last time a Jew took instruction without asking questions or raising objections. In any case, Jewish legend has long enjoyed elaborating the story of Abraham. One of the most entertaining tales told about this father of nations, that's what Abraham means in Hebrew, more or less, comes from a medieval Sephardic song in the beautiful Ladino language called Cuando el Rey Nimrod, perhaps the best-known Spanish-Jewish song of all. It tells the tale of Abraham's birth and circumcision in terms that differ from the story told in the Torah this week in many particulars. For example, Abraham is born in the Jewish quarter. Quite a feat when you are the first Jew ever born. We'll play two versions of Cuando el Rey this morning, first from Baruch Kohan's tape, We Wish You Love. My favorite element in Cuando el Rey is the description of a star shining in the sky, indicating the birth of Abraham. A tale probably borrowed back from the Christian culture in which many Spanish Jews of the Middle Ages lived. Also, Abraham was circumcised at the age of 90, according to the Torah, not on the eighth day, as is the requirement established in this week's Torah portion and as implied in the song. Listen. Jews have always known that you never let historical accuracy get in the way of a good tune. Circumcision is the subject of many jokes and some discomfort, but it's also the fundamental Jewish covenant or brit, often called a bris. Abraham is commanded by God to walk before me and be tamim, whole, implying that becoming whole means making a physical sign of the covenant. As usual, I'm tempted to segue into a series of moil jokes. You know what a moil brings to a circumcision, don't you? A brisket. or what you serve at the meal after a bris? Cold cuts. I know somebody who served pizza and invited everyone to come by for a slice. Sorry, I should cut that out. When we come back, we'll talk to Tom Price about the international Jewish scene, particularly the International Court of Justice in The Hague, and what it has to do with Israel's border fence.
Every once in a while, you want a different sort of day. A day you can be transported in a comfortable coach bus, partake in a wonderful luncheon, and see a show you'll truly enjoy, like Showboat. Min will take you on a journey of pure delight. For entertainment trips to Mesa, Globe, and elsewhere, call Min at 296-1190. The delightful musical Showboat will be performed on the 25th of February in Mesa, Arizona. It's $60 for the whole experience, including the bus, the meal, and the show. Call Min at 296-1190. Ask about their Apache Gold overnight trip, too. It's to enjoy. Call Min at 296-1190.
We're delighted to welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Tom, the International Court of Justice at The Hague has been much in the news because it's being asked to rule on the border fence. Can you explain what this is and how it works?
Yeah, I can try. It's a fairly complicated notion. The International Court of Justice is part of the UN system, and it was created at the same time as the United Nations. And it was obviously a successor to an equivalent institution which was linked to the League of Nations. The confusing thing about the International Court of Justice in The Hague is that, A, it only hears cases between states. So an individual can't bring a case to the International Court of Justice. Neither can a private corporation. The only exception to this is that UN agencies, whether the Security Council, the General Assembly, UNESCO, UNICEF, whatever, can act as state parties for cases heard by the ICJ. But the other thing that's important to understand is that the International Court of Justice doesn't automatically have jurisdiction unless a state agrees and signs an instrument that gives it across-the-board jurisdiction. So, for example, the United States had once signed such an instrument and could be a party to cases heard by the ICJ, but then in the wake of the Nicaragua affair, the United States withdrew that instrument. And now the United States can't be a party because without consent of the state involved, the court has no jurisdiction. A further twist, though, is that two states can agree or can even be obligated by treaty to resolve a specific dispute at the ICJ so that even without depositing the instrument that gives the ICJ blanket authority, in a specific case, the ICJ may have jurisdiction. Also, states may wish to have a case heard at the International Court of Justice by a specific chamber of that court and not by the whole court. In other words, for example, the whole court has justices from all over the developing world, Africa, Asia, whatever. The United States and France may wish to resolve a case there in front of judges who are only from the developed world. So they can deposit instruments which allow a specific subchamber of the court to have jurisdiction, but not the whole court. Is that clear at all?
I think it is. So when a question is brought, for example, the border fence, which is now brought before the court, can it be brought by the Palestinian Authority, which isn't recognized as a country?
It can be if they have a seat at the UN.
I see. And so when they bring this before the court, that means Israel's already agreed to participate at some degree, or it could be brought even if Israel doesn't agree.
No. It can be brought, but it can't be heard unless Israel has signed a document, an instrument, giving the court blanket jurisdiction over all cases which may involve Israel. And at any point, such an instrument can also be withdrawn. And there's lots of precedent for that.
So is there any enforcement authority of the court?
Only in the sense that the UN has enforcement authority. It's exactly equivalent legally and morally to the United Nations.
Tom, thanks for explaining this rather complex and even arcane aspect of international justice. We'll talk next week.
My pleasure.
Many of you are faithful listeners to Two Jewish. And if you aren't yet, you should be, because the Bible guarantees you a longer, healthier life, lower cholesterol, and a reward in the world to come, just for listening to Too Jewish. Well, if you have been listening carefully, you know all about Mel Gibson's upcoming Jesus flick, The Lamentable Passion of Christ, in which Jews are portrayed in virulently anti-Semitic ways. There have been many protests from Jewish leaders about the tack that Mad Max Mel is taking in this peculiar venture, which includes filming the whole thing in Aramaic and Latin and providing no English subtitles or dubbing. We have already commented on the ludicrous quality of using Latin in the film, since no one in Israel in the first century actually spoke Latin, oops, and on the very anti-historical approach that the religiously reactionary Gibson has taken with this material. Perhaps Mr. Lethal Weapon should have left well enough alone and simply done what all other overage movie action heroes do, become governor of California. In any case, lest you think that the objections to Gibson's film The Passion of Christ are only coming from Jews, historians, and radio rabbis, another entity critiqued the film more dramatically last week. Jim Cavazel, the actor who plays Jesus in Gibson's film, has escaped injury after being struck by lightning during filming. Let's hear that again. That's right, literally struck by lightning. If that isn't enough of an indication of divine ill favor, it must be noted that this is the second time that the set of the Passion of Christ flick has been struck by lightning. Anybody think God might be a little ticked off at the whole enterprise? It seems the crew was on a remote location a few hours from Rome when a storm happened. "I'm about 100 feet away from them," producer Steve McAvity said, "when I glance over and see lightning coming out of Cavazel's ears." That must have been something to see. Both Cavazel and an assistant director were struck. The main bolt hit Cavazel, and one of its forks hit the assistant director's umbrella. Neither of the men sustained injury in the incident. The assistant director, named Michelini, has been nicknamed Lightning Boy after being struck twice by lightning during the filming in Italy. He had already suffered light burns on the tips of his fingers in an earlier incident, filming on a hilltop in the town of Matera. So, let's see. I think this film is a really bad idea, but what do I know? I'm just a rabbi on the radio. On the other hand, when God weighs in, lightning hits the set twice, and when it hits the guy playing Jesus, you have to wonder if a little divine unhappiness is being expressed. Wait, I'm receiving a prophetic communication.
Mel, don't make this evil picture. No one will pay to see it anyway.
Well, at the very least, this film is generating some real electricity. sorry. When we come back, we'll hear from Danny Bobman, our maven on Israel, and get the news of Jews around the world.
At Temple Emmanuel Preschool, they really have fun.
Aleph, bet, vet.
Aleph, bet, vet.
Gimel, dalet, hey.
Gimel, dalet, hey.
At Temple Emmanuel Preschool.
Temple Emmanuel Preschool.
We learn and play all day.
We learn and play all day.
At Temple Emmanuel Preschool, children are welcome from 6 weeks to pre-kindergarten. We've got small class sizes with a low student-to-teacher ratio. Our professional staff is highly trained and nurturing, and the school offers an all-day extended program with a rich learning curriculum including science, art, music, and dance. Of course, Temple Emmanuel Preschool is open to community members of all faiths. We invite you to come for a visit anytime. Just call Lynn or Melissa at 325-0390. Remember, at Temple Emmanuel Preschool,
we learn and play all day.
Temple Emmanuel Preschool on Country Club just north of Broadway. Call 325-0390 or go to templeemmanueltucson.org.
We are so pleased to introduce a new feature here on Too Jewish. It's called The Old Joke of the Week. Humor your bubby new. A little cultural perspective for all of you on being Jewish. The Italian says, "I'm tired and thirsty, I must have wine." The Frenchman says, "I'm tired and thirsty, I must have cognac." The Russian says, "I'm tired and thirsty, I must have vodka." The German says, "I'm tired and thirsty, I must have beer." The Mexican says, "I'm tired and thirsty, I must have tequila." The Jew says, "I'm tired and thirsty, I must have diabetes." That's the old joke of the week. Humor your Bubby and Zadie knew. A special feature of Too Jewish brought to you at no extra charge. When we come back, we'll talk with Danny Bobman, our maven on Israel, and get the news of Jews around the world.
So, here you are, enjoying your Sunday morning with Rabbi Sam Kohan, his mavens, and his friends. Isn't it great hearing the variety of in-depth interviews, the traditional and not-so-traditional Jewish music, the news of Jews around the world, and of course the wit and humor that you've come to expect? You know, producing Too Jewish is a labor of love, but we do need your help. We'd like to ask your business to consider advertising right here within our show. By advertising here, you'll reach an educated, affluent audience, an audience that's loyal. It's easy and inexpensive to advertise on Too Jewish. Just call 327-4501. Your call will help guarantee that Too Jewish remains a source for the best of Jewish culture. Please call today, 327-4501. 327-4501. And thanks from your friends right here at Too Jewish.
Our Jewish poetry slam this morning comes from the great Yiddish poet Yaakov Glotzstein. It's based on this week's Torah portion of Lech Lecha, God's call to Abraham to seek a new land under God's direction. The poem is called Genesis. Why don't we start all over again with a small people, out of the cradle and little, the two of us, wanderers over the nations, tillers of the soil, will bow before you. You'll live on burnt offerings of grain. I'll go around preaching folk wisdom. It won't reach past our borders, but the least little child will greet me good morning. Why don't we both go home and start over from the very beginning out of our littleness? Almighty God, who has waxed great over the seven firmaments and continents, swollen steel strong in vast churches and synagogues, Lord of the universe, you've deserted field and barn. I, the close love of my people, we've both turned universal. Come back, dear God, to a land no bigger than a speck. Dwindle down to only ours. I'll go around with homely sayings suitable for chewing over in small places. We'll both be provincial, God and his poet. Maybe it will go sweeter for us. Out of the cradle and little, why don't we start over again? Growing up bordered by a hallowed land, children will laugh all around with delight. We'll be poor and full of truth. Your holy blessing will just suffice for a people peaceable and good. No one beyond our borders will hear my name or yours. Come back. Be our Jewish God again. Our Jewish poetry slam from poet Yaakov Glotzstein, translated by author Cynthia Ozick. We're delighted now to welcome Danny Bobman, our maven on Israel.
Good morning, Rabbi. Last Tuesday, some Israelis went to the polls for yet another municipal elections. I'm saying some, since some of the cities held earlier elections for various reasons. Only 42% of the voters showed up to vote. It was the lowest turnout percentage-wise of any municipal elections held since such elections were held. In Tel Aviv, only 26% went to cast their vote, and the current mayor, a retired ace fighter pilot and ex-Air Force commander, maintained his position. By the way, one of our future guest speakers, Yael Dayan, ran on these elections at the head of the left-wing Dovish Meretz Party. She came in third after the current mayor and the Senior Citizens Party. She stands a very good chance to become the deputy mayor of Tel Aviv. If so, it will be even more interesting to talk to her on her January visit to Tucson. I think it is too early to analyze these elections, but allow me to make some comments. Let's talk about the low turnout voters. Some may say it is a sign of weakening democracy. I don't think so. In the early years of Israel, voters would be hustled by party officials to the polls. Busloads of potential supporters would get the voters to the polls, and the captive audience would be constantly reminded of who to vote for. New immigrants, who had no clue about who is who in Israel, were deceived to vote one way or the other, led by false promises of bettering their lives in Israel. Party officials would pound local activists to win local elections no matter what, since success in the municipal was as good as identification as any of what might take place during the national elections. The organized blitz on Israeli citizens, coupled with doomsday's prophecies of what will happen if the other party will win, and the naive sense of total ideological loyalty to a party on any battlefield, pretty similar to the sports fan devotion to all the teams that carry the name Wildcats, no matter in which sports field or who's playing for them, all these generated extremely high participation in local elections, 70 to 80%. Today, Israelis are much more sophisticated politically. New immigrants are well-informed and do not fall for false promises. Israelis distinguish between national elections and local needs. We vote for the best municipal administrator, not for a potential prime minister. We vote for local guys who we know, and not for party appointees who rides the election wave on their way to the Knesset. We look for results in current governing mayors, and we would keep them if they do well enough, or kick them, regardless of what their party may tell us. These are signs of political maturity. But I must admit that such low turnouts also indicates some loss of faith. Many Israelis think that their government is not the only one to be blamed for the economical hardships, and they blame local officials for not doing their best to assist the needy. More than 400 NGOs emerged out of the failures of local government incompetences to supplement the urgent needs of society's weakest links. So the lack of confidence with officials' performances led not only to the widespread voluntary social actions, but also to turning a cold shoulder to those who did not deliver. Speaking of economic hardships in Israel, there is actually something we can all do about it in the very near future. As in the last year, on November 9th through the 11th, the Ben Yehuda Mall is back in Tucson. Help the Israeli economy by purchasing all of your holiday gifts, the unusual and authentic jewelry, artworks, crafts, Judaica, t-shirts, posters, music, and Dead Sea skincare products at the Tucson Jewish Community Center. You may not solve all the problems, but you can provide some relief to those who make and sell these products. So, see you next week, Rabbi. And don't forget, November 9 to 11 at the Ben Yehuda Mall.
Thanks, Danny. Shavua Tov. A good week. If you have questions, comments, or criticism, send it to us at 2JewishRadio@yahoo.com. We promise to write back, and quickly. You can now get CDs of past 2 Jewish shows for a nominal cost by calling Temple Emmanuel at 327-4501 or on the web at templeemmanueltucson.org. When we return, we'll get the news of Jews around the world and spend more time with our guest, Israeli historian, philosopher, and TV commentator Shai Ben-Tekoa.
If you're like most people, your biggest purchase is your home. Don't you wish there was someone you could turn to who not only had knowledge and experience, but who truly cared about you? If you're looking to buy or sell a home, you need to know Jill Rich. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. With over 20 years of experience, Jill's one of Tucson's top realtors. She specializes in all kinds of residential property. She can find you a starter house or a castle. Jill will find you the perfect home. While the stock market has wild gyrations, real estate grows in value. If you want to invest in income property, Jill can guide you. And if you're thinking about selling your home, Jill provides a personal marketing program to sell your house fast. You can reach Jill Rich at Realty Executives River Road office, 615-8400. Jill provides strong representation in a caring way. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. Jill Rich, call 615-8400.
We continue with our 2 Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
The Israeli army blew up three partly constructed 13-story Palestinian Authority buildings in the Gaza Strip last week, sending shockwaves from the explosion miles away. Security officials said the buildings in Al-Zara had been used by terrorists to observe troop movements before an attack by Hamas and Islamic Jihad on the nearby Jewish settlement of Netzarim last week, in which three soldiers were killed, two of them women soldiers. That attack came days after a high-level meeting in Syria between the leader of the Islamic Jihad, Ramadan Shallah, and a senior Hamas leader, Khaled Mashal, in which they agreed to enhance, quote-unquote, field cooperation. The Syrian foreign minister, Farouk al-Shara, said in an interview that Syria may target Jewish settlements on the Golan Heights, which was captured by Israel in the 1967 war of aggression by Syria, if Israel carried out any further attacks against Syria now. This is widely viewed as an empty threat, as Syria lacks the ability to face Israeli forces directly, and unlike the terror groups which specialize in attacking settlements and exposed human beings, Syria actually has something to lose by entering into armed conflict with Israel. In a world that seems to be getting gloomier by the day, the Malaysian Prime Minister's keynote address to a World Islamic Summit last week must stand as a kind of depressing milestone. October 16th, Mahathir Mohamad, one of Asia's longest ruling and most popular leaders, delivered what sounded like a call for worldwide Muslim jihad against the Jews. His audience, a glittering assemblage of monarchs and prime ministers from the 57 undemocratic Islamic nations, plus a bevy of distinguished guests, gave him a standing ovation. The speech was studded with repugnant phrases of the sort that haven't been heard from such a prominent international platform since the Nazis. The Jews, the Malaysian premier said, rule the world by proxy. They get others to fight and die for them. Not only that, he said, but after having survived 2,000 years of pogroms, the Jews, quote, invented and successfully promoted socialism, communism, human rights, and democracy. Imagine that. Isn't that awful? So that persecuting them would appear to be wrong, so they may enjoy equal rights with others. With these, they have now gained control of the most powerful countries. Apparently not Malaysia, however. If there were any truth to all of this, wouldn't Israel be receiving rather better international regard than it now experiences? The response from the West to Mahathir's hate speech has been, appropriately, outrage. The European Union, that bastion of decency, nonetheless issued an immediate condemnation through its head office, calling the remarks false and anti-Semitic, and saying they have no place in a decent world. Germany's foreign ministry called in the Malaysian envoy for a formal dressing down. Italy's foreign minister called the speech a blow to understanding between the Western world and the Islamic world. And all that happened the first day after the speech. One day later, French President Jacques Chirac wrote to Mahathir personally, condemning the remarks and invoking the memory of the Holocaust. The U.S. shockingly gave one of the most tepid responses, a condemnation from a mid-level State Department spokesman. Only 4 days afterward did President Bush step in, telling Mahathir face-to-face, at least according to the White House press secretary, that the remarks were wrong and divisive. Mahathir says Bush did nothing of the sort. While there is some sentiment in favor of a boycott of Malaysian travel, it seems likely that the prime minister's remarks will bring no long-term consequences for his country or for his tenure in office. In the meantime, Germany recently announced its decision to stop all arms sales to Israel. Since then, other countries have followed suit. In response, Israel has canceled its annual multi-million dollar contract for its nationwide Dan buses, which used to be manufactured in Germany, and is looking at other bus suppliers in the U.S. and Japan. It seems as though the victim is again getting blamed. In other news, the Bush administration has abandoned its opposition to Israel's construction of a security fence in the West Bank, easing a major point of tension between Washington and Jerusalem in recent months. According to pro-Israel activists in Washington, Palestinian diplomats, and sources close to the Bush administration. Until this summer, the administration had vocally expressed its opposition to the fence, warning that its construction could hinder America's roadmap peace plan. But with last month's resignation of Palestinian Prime Minister Mahmoud Abbas, the administration now appears to accept not only the idea of the fence, but its deep penetration into the West Bank. The White House thinks Israel is justified in erecting the fence and that the Palestinian Authority has brought the fence on itself by not cracking down on terrorism. Furthermore, administration officials indicated that the Bush White House accepts the principle that security considerations necessitate allowing the fence to veer into the West Bank. A senior diplomat for the Palestinian Authority, speaking on condition of anonymity, characterized the American policy shift on the fence as dramatic. He explained the administration's concerns regarding the fence have shifted from political to humanitarian. In two Holocaust-related stories, there is a bill in Congress now trying to get a U.S. stamp to honor Anne Frank on what would have been her 75th birthday. And in Krakow, Poland, the Jewish community unveiled a new statue of Oskar Schindler, the Nazi industrialist whose list saved 1,200 Jews from the gas chambers during the Holocaust. And that's the news of Jews around the world. We are pleased to welcome back Shai Ben-Tekoa, a self-proclaimed settler in the Shtachim, the territories. Shai is a prominent Israeli news commentator, formerly of Arutz Sheva, the Israel National News Program. Today he has his own internet radio show from Israel, which includes his commentary and a great deal of Israel's contemporary religious music, can be heard at www.deprogramprogram.com. Shai Ben-Tekoa is a graduate of Columbia University. He also studied at the University of Chicago and Hebrew University. In 1991, in preparation for the Arab-Israeli Peace Conference in Madrid, he worked on assignment for the office of the Prime Minister of Israel, Yitzhak Shamir. Today, he is a writer and commentator. He'll be speaking at Temple Emmanuel this Sunday night at 7 p.m. That's tonight at 7. And we welcome back Shai Ben-Tekoa to 2 Jewish.
Thank you.
Shai, will the border fence work to create security within Israel, in your opinion?
Yes, it won't be 100%, but it will work. People are not happy with it for a variety of reasons. It has two purposes, according to Prime Minister Sharon. Number one is to stop the suicide bombers, and that was the main catalyst for creating it, because that tactic of using suicide bombers is pretty much indefensible so long as the demographics remain as they are. It's a weapon the Arabs have developed for which there is almost no defense, and the fence will go some way to defending against it, not perfectly. That's one reason. The other reason is that since the Oslo process started in 1993, by some estimates we have been inundated by anywhere from 200 to a quarter million Arabs who have crossed over the ceasefire line from 1949, sometimes called the Green Line, and just taken up residence in the Arab communities in Israel as it was constituted from 1949 to 1967. So it has this dual purpose, and that is as much a problem as the immediate threat of the suicide bombers, and so that fence is trying to serve a dual purpose.
Shai, are some settlers fanatics?
Statistically insignificantly so. It plays no role in the process. There are 230,000 now and growing, and to my knowledge, there are maybe about 10 to 12 guys who have been problematic.
By problematic, you mean?
Yeah, who cause trouble, who have shot at people, but again, that's 12 out of 230,000. They are statistically insignificant, they play no role, and other people have been amazed at the restraint of the Jewish people living in Judea and Samaria and Gaza, who rely completely on the security forces, as they should, as law-abiding people.
Tell me, you've described the necessity of Jews in your view of staying in the West Bank and Gaza. Let's talk about a place like Hebron. You've talked about geopolitical strategic realities. Hebron is perhaps 500 Jews surrounded by hundreds of thousands of Arabs. Is that geopolitically defensible?
It's geopolitically defensible if one understands or views the conflict in its true dimensions, which is to say that we are in a war of independence which has never ended, and the issue, the reason for all the bloodshed, the true root cause of the conflict is the refusal of the Arabs to leave us alone and let us live in peace in our own ancient homeland, which again is only 50 miles across. And it's an extraordinarily holy place, and it's that place which has kept the Jews alive, and we cannot surrender it any more than the French would want to surrender Paris, or the Texans would want to surrender the Alamo. There is not only a materialist side to existence, there's a spiritual side.
When you began working with Yitzhak Shamir around the Madrid conference in 1991, did you think one of the results might be the potential withdrawal from many of the Shtachim?
No. Well, first of all, I had a very specific task to perform. I did research for the Shamir government. They were being pressured by President Bush.
The first President Bush.
First President, right. Bush 41, as we say. And James Baker, to go to an international peace conference under the auspices of the United Nations. Every Israeli government across the board has rejected that option because of the hostility of the UN to Israel. The United States administration at the time countered that with a Jewish paranoia, and what they were looking for is some kind of documentation. So I spent several months reading every resolution on the Middle East created by the United Nations.
That must have been interesting reading.
It was. At the same time, it's incredibly tedious because it's like a stuttering person. It's a repetition compulsion. I read 870 resolutions.
What don't Americans understand about settlers?
That they're just Jews. The very term itself, like so many of the words used in this debate, are loaded, and they are meant, in a way George Orwell understood, not to reveal reality, but to disguise it.
Shifting again, you've written on the American occupation of Iraq. Back in July, you said the American Expeditionary Force is inside a country with no shortage of young men itching to test their mettle by bagging an infidel or two. The military posture of U.S. forces has mutated from that of an army on the offensive to a static constabulary force. American soldiers are not now being targeted as they advance, but as they occupy. What do you think the end result will be of the American occupation of Iraq? Will it be good for Iraq? Will it be good for Americans?
I'm not a prophet, and I'm beginning to have my doubts about my own prophecy that you're reading there. I don't know what the staying power is here. We're losing people, but again, as Ralph Peters said in his syndicated column the other day, it's a drop in the bucket, it's chump change. We're losing a soldier a day or two, who's speaking as an American now, which is tragic in individual cases seen under the microscope, but in the macro, it's quite small. I don't know what's going to happen there. What I am sure of is that nationalism as we understand it in the West does not exist there and will not exist there. And I am confident in my belief that this nation building that they speak of in the State Department is a fantasy. You don't build nations from the outside. People from inside build them, and they take often centuries. No Arab country has democracy that is pro-Western or pro-American. And there's no reason to believe Iraq will ever be turned into one. When I say ever, I mean for the foreseeable future. So on the one hand, I'm very pessimistic. On the other hand, were I in charge, I would probably pursue the same strategy the Bush administration is pursuing now, which is to say, once you're in, it's difficult to get out. And given the stubbornness and the stiff-necked nature of Americans, which is good, there may be reason for optimism that something can be accomplished there, which is to say something can be created which will allow America to get out gracefully, to create some kind of government which say, well, now we're finished, like this controversy over mission accomplished. We'd be able to say, well, we've done it, and now we're going home, goodbye.
Which is something Israel doesn't have the option of doing.
No.
I want to thank Shai Ben-Tikko for a fascinating view from the settlements, well, from Judea and Samaria. Thank you for being here on Too Jewish, Shai Ben-Tikko.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Shai will be at Temple Emmanuel tonight at 7 p.m. You're welcome to come. There's no charge. It's at 7 o'clock, 225 North Country Club Road, and you're welcome also to bring your questions, comments, and criticisms. When we come back, we'll get a final play out and hear about next week's guest.
Have you ever wanted to know more about Judaism but were afraid to ask or just didn't know the best place to start? Temple Emmanuel's Adult Education Academy, the largest and most complete adult Jewish education in Arizona, is taking registration now for its outstanding fall classes, beginning the week of October 20th. Classes range from introductory courses like Taste of Judaism and Practical Judaism to Basic Judaism and Intermediate Judaism, and they include Kabbalah, Three Levels of Hebrew, courses in the forbidden love poetry of the Song of Songs, the Book of Kings, the Prayers of the Heart, adult bar and bat mitzvah, adult confirmation, and Jewish book and movie groups. Call 327-4501 for a brochure and more information. Our instructors include Rabbi Samuel M. Kohan, Rabbi David Freeland, and Rabbi Richard Safran. They're all outstanding and entertaining teachers. Classes meet in central Tucson and in the Northwest. Do the Jewish thing. Learn. Call 327-4501 to find out more. Thank you for joining us this morning on Too Jewish with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends. You can contact us at 327-4501 or at TooJewishRadio@yahoo.com. Come back next Sunday at 10 right here on 990 AM KTKT.
Thanks for being here today. Next week's guest is Ed Carno, author of the book Is Your Parent in Good Hands? About Preventing Elderly Abuse. Our playout this morning comes from Yehoram Gaon, our second version of Quando el Rey Nimrod, the great circumcision song of the Sephardim. But we'll play a short version. Shavua Tov, my friends. A good week and a week, we pray, of peace.
Quando il re Nimrod dal campo salia, mirava e nel cielo e in la estreria, vido luz santa en la giuderia, che avia de nascer Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu, padre querido, padre bendicio, luz de Israel. Avraham Avinu, padre querido, padre bendicio, luz de Israel. La mujer de Terach quedó preñada, de día en día le preguntaba.
The preceding program was produced and paid for by Temple Emmanuel.